on, and there was a problem this morning. Yeah, SolarStar did some changes to the locks, which actually I think will result in better sound quality for you, better listening experience. But as was always the case with me, whenever I made changes, there always were problems that arose. You always have to be really, really careful with those changes. And something's bound to, in fact, go wrong, as indeed this morning it has gone wrong. Hopefully this will not recur. I will do my best to prevent it from doing so. It is the Christmas week, and really, really awful news out of New York City. This dual murder there, officers Liu and Ramos killed by really a lone wolf gunman, came up from Baltimore. And I guess he said it was revenge. I guess it was, he was inspired by the killing, of Eric Garner, and maybe to a lesser degree of Michael Brown in Ferguson, but obviously Garner was a New Yorker who was killed by a New York City police officer. And I guess there was a sense this kook had, this nut had, that somehow this killer, and he was a killer, a multiple killer, a mass murderer, because he had killed his girlfriend. I guess you become a mass killer when you kill three people or more. I would say you're a dual killer if you kill two people. So you got to go to the three to get to that level of being a mass killer. He'd already killed his girlfriend in Baltimore before he drove up Highway 95, I guess, and Interstate 95, I-95, we call it on the East Coast, and killed Ramos and Liu in the Bedford-Stuy neighborhood. And pretty much the universal reaction has been horror, outrage, anger at the killer. One thing that's kind of been played up for all it's worth by the right-wing media is that a few people apparently on the street in that neighborhood where the killer acted were pleased or cheered or said things like it serves them right. And right-wing media is using that to try to portray, I guess the implication is, they won't come right out and say it, the implication is the African-American community is lawless, wholly opposed to the police. And nothing really could be further from the truth. In fact, statement after statement has come out from leaders across the spectrum about how outrageous this is, how wrong this is. I've got several emails from Harlem Mothers Save. There will be a vigil for officers Liu and Ramos, condemnation across the city against the killer who was, I believe, killed by the police. It's very unfortunate. And, it makes me so sad to see my country falling apart in a city that I grew up, I was born in, Manhattan, and I spent the first 4 or 5 years of my life there. And I've often spent time in New York City. And it's terrible. It's so sad to see it. And you just, my sisters live, both are Manhattanites. My mom lives outside New York City, goes there frequently. I, on vacations, go up there. So sad to see the city torn asunder. And maybe that's too strong. Maybe that's too, I don't know what the right word is, being hyperbolic. It's really not being torn asunder. Yeah, there's still violence and there's anger. My niece was out there in the streets protesting with her friend Adam. We interviewed them. But crime is way down. New York is a much safer place to be. If it's being torn asunder, it's not being torn asunder because of crime. It's not being torn asunder because of anger at the police. What's really ripping New York City and ripping our country apart is economic injustice. The frustration, the hopelessness, the sense among so many New Yorkers, and frankly at this point, former New Yorkers, that there's no place in America for them anymore. No good jobs, no decent jobs, no jobs beyond subsistence ones. And this is fueling the anger, the protests, the idea that this country just isn't working for the 99%. New York has largely become a playground for the rich and famous, especially Manhattan, for sure. And, you know, we talked to Jackie Roe Adams from Harlem Mother Save, and so many of her people, her folks, her friends, they can't afford to live in Harlem anymore. I mean, this was an area, yeah, there were problems, crime, certainly, not a safe area. I didn't feel comfortable if I was there after dark, even during, you know, when I was a kid, I would never go north of 96th Street. But people could live there. People could afford it. People who were working tough jobs throughout the city, not high-paying jobs. Those jobs are gone. Or the best, you know, working at McDonald's now, you can't afford to live in Harlem. It's just too expensive. $1,000 a month for a one-bedroom, maybe. Probably more than that. You can't afford that on the fast food wages in New York City. Maybe go live way out, outer Brooklyn. But that's expensive, too. Houses there are very expensive. $500,000 or more for, you know, kind of a dump, to be honest with you. That's what's fueling, ultimately, the anger. People knowing they can't afford the city, knowing they can't live there anymore, being pushed out, being marginalized. And the police lording it over the folks who are struggling. Yeah, crime is way down for a variety of different reasons. One of the reasons is there just aren't a lot of poor people in New York. Street crime. Sure, there's plenty of crime on Wall Street. Plenty of crime among the corporate lawyers, figuring out all manner of ways to skirt regulations, to skirt taxes. Crime among the financial elite, in terms of pushing risky products, risky securities, and not divulging the potential for, you know, absolute explosion in terms of implosion of the values. But street crime is down because the people who normally would commit those, they're not living in New York anymore, and they're fewer and farther between. But those who remain, who are poor, who are struggling, they know that the city isn't a place where they're welcome. And it's causing a lot of friction, a lot of tension, a lot of anger. It's interesting, isn't it, that the guy who, the killer himself, came from out of state, came up from Baltimore. Gun laws are not real lax in Maryland. I don't know where he got his peace, but it wasn't in New York City. And those who say, well, and you know, you'll hear the gun nuts say, well, look, it just shows you, New York has really strict gun laws, and yet there was gun violence there, so it proves the gun laws don't work. It's absurd. He didn't get his weapon in New York City. He got it somewhere else. But if you want to join me, we're not going to have a break in this segment, you know, through the bottom of the hour because the problems to open the show. But if you want to call me, 844-4-HELGY, 844-367-4254. The old mayor, his honor, Rudy Giuliani, was on Fox's and Friends, I guess, Weekend Edition. And I'm going to play this. I'm going to interrupt a lot. A lot of what Giuliani says is absurd, but kind of gives us insight, I believe, into what's going on both on the right and in New York City, the way they manipulate on the right crises, tragedies for their own benefit, but also some truth comes out as well. The phone number here, 844-4-HELGY, 844-367-4254. We do have one guest scheduled at 7 o'clock Pacific, 10 East Coast time, and that is Aaron Miller. He's from Electology. He's going to talk about better ways to run elections, better ways to have representation than we have currently. And also, he is an expert on male contraceptives. And we're not just talking the tried and true condom, but other methods as well. And we'll discuss all of those with Aaron Miller starting at about 7 o'clock, just after 7 o'clock Pacific, 10 o'clock East Coast time. Today is Monday, December 22nd, 2014, the week of Christmas. If you celebrate it, even if you don't, it's still the week of Christmas. And by the way, it's 9:19, if I didn't say that, on the East Coast. And I do hope you'll check out my website, HelGinsburg.com. I was reading over the weekend, just to give a quick plug for my website, five myths. This is like a big deal now, right? 5 myths, 4 myths, 10 myths. Like, everyone wants to write myths about something, you know, some conventional wisdom that apparently, you know, everyone thinks is true, but it isn't. And a lot of times the myths are just nonsense. First of all, they're not myths. Like, nobody believes any of the myths that are supposedly myths. But it's kind of a lazy person's way of doing analysis, of doing commentary, rather than, you know, coming up with original ideas and presenting them, laying out your arguments in a logical fashion, and then ultimately concluding with a call for some kind of action, which I think is the best commentary. You know, to describe a problem and then to call for a solution. But the myths is just like, well, this is what other people have said, and here's why they're wrong, without, you know, coming up with any original thoughts on your own. So I think it's lazy journalism. I don't like its proliferation. You know, on occasion, the myths can be a good way to attack conventional wisdom when there is conventional wisdom, but so many times commentators want to make things up and call them myths and say, well, everyone believes this, when really not everyone does. If you want to read some good commentary, I just said it, I'll say it again, you should go to my website, halginsberg.com. And especially when it comes to the carbon tax, fossil fuels, I was reading in the Washington Post the response to those 5 myths about the carbon tax. And I thought, nah, this is nonsense. Go to my website. I posted links to it. Hopefully people will go there. All right, let me get right back to the killings in Brooklyn. That's the topic of the day. And I want to play this from Mayor Giuliani. Some of what he had to say really wasn't so bad. Some of it was very bad indeed.
Honored to have former New York City Mayor Rudy Giuliani with us this morning to react to all of this. Mr. Mayor, there are ominous reports that bystanders in Bedford-Stuyvesant applauded some of them and laughed at the shooting of the police. Have you ever seen the city this...
I'm going to stop it right there. That's that guy Carl... Is this Tucker Carlson? And he's kind of a known race baiter. And I want to just cut that off right there, because he did a lot of research. He starts the interview attacking black people, African Americans. That's who lives in the neighborhood, Bedford-Stuyvesant. It's a it's almost 100% African American, and you know, he's spinning this that a tiny number, a lot. There were reports from, you know, reporters who were actually there, you know, who were in the neighborhood at the time of the shooting. By the way, the neighborhood, you know, what was very prominently featured in the movie, Now Do the Right Thing. Okay, Spike Lee's Do the Right Thing. That takes place in Bedford-Stuyvesant. And it's kind of a rough era. It was rougher in the 80s than it is now. But, you know, businesses, people, just like everywhere else, going about their business. Most people trying to survive in a tough world. And what Tucker Carlson wants to do is demonize the residents. That's what he wants to get out of this, is to turn his audience against the black people who live in Bedford-Stuyvesant by suggesting that they were supporting these ominous reports. In fact, there were a few people who apparently, you know, what is the word I'm looking for here, who, you know, who were cursing at some police, who were there, who were criticizing the officers. But the reaction across the board has been one of sympathy for the officers. And I think Black Lives Matter they came out immediately. They have been in the forefront against police brutality, against excessive force. And the first thing they did was come out and say, this is wrong. We condemn the killings. An eye for an eye leaves the whole world blind. I thought that was, just remarkably humane and appropriate. I mean, I don't want to give people too much credit for doing the right thing, but we're talking about a community communities across the country who have been under siege, who feel that they're under siege by police, who perceive themselves to be under siege by police officers. Not every officer, certainly, but some. And they don't perceive a lot of friends in blue. They don't believe there are a lot of people in City Hall who take their side. And, you know, you can see it from the failure, for example, to bring charges against Michael Brown, Michael Brown's killer, Darren Wilson, and against Eric Garner's killer, Officer Panaleo. So it's understandable, it makes perfect sense, that the communities where people are being killed, unarmed people, Tamir Rice, a 12-year-old, by the way, I called it a water gun. It was actually an air gun, I believe. So it was actually, it could have done a little harm what he was carrying, I believe. And if I'm wrong, I'll correct that. But try to be as accurate as possible. But across the city, across the country, people are condemning the killer. Black Lives Matter condemned the senseless killing of two NYPD officers Saturday. An eye for an eye is not our vision of justice. We who have taken to the streets seeking justice and liberation know that we need deep transformation to correct the larger institutional problems of racial profiling, abuse, and violence. And this was a lone gun person, okay? This guy, Brinsley, and I said he killed his ex-girlfriend. It says wounded. So I guess he had shot and wounded her in Baltimore before he killed Wenjen Liu and Rafael Ramos. It's hard to, I mean, you want to blame if you're on the right, I guess. I don't get it, but they want to blame minorities. They want to blame black people. They want to blame liberals. And yet, we see that the communities that they're attacking have demonstrated a level of sympathy and empathy that they're incapable of. We didn't see police across the country expressing sympathy, concern, sorrow for the people they killed, for the people the police are killing on a weekly basis. We're not hearing them apologize. But we see from what Black Lives Matter said that those who are condemning the police killings of unarmed men and boys that are unjustified, and condemning, I think, even more so the sense that there's no justice, that there's no, the system is rigged, that prosecutors simply are not prepared to fully and fairly investigate and bring charges in cases that are warranted against cops. Black Lives Matter says, you know what? That doesn't matter. We got two innocent cops. We got two men sitting in a car, as far as we know, have done nothing wrong, didn't hurt the killer, they were not in any way a threat to him, and they were shot down. We are going to speak out against that immediately. So what does Tucker Carlson do? He has to say, well, there were a few people in the community who were cheering. It's outrageous. Now, let me get Fred's calling in, but I want to get my first caller before I get Fred. All right, who do I have before Fred on the line here? Good morning. 615 area code. Who's calling?
Carl.
Hey, Carl. Go ahead, buddy.
Well, I tell you, one of the first faces that I saw when the news story first broke Saturday was a black lady from Bedford. She was just literally going off and saying that she was articulate and saying that this is unacceptable. I mean, she was visibly shook at what had happened and looked visibly sick. And she was as black as I am. And for him to say something like that is just totally ridiculous. And it's to be expected from that news outlet and from Tucker Carlson. Period. It's to be expected.
It's so wrong. I mean, we are seeing so much heart in the black communities across our country, Carl, who are holding out the hand, an open hand, a hand of friendship, reaching out to the police victims a hand that was never reached out to them by the police.
Absolutely. And then let's not get lost into the
I'll tell you what, Carl. Hold on, buddy. Do me a favor if you can, because I got that break at the bottom of the hour. I cannot stop that. We'll come right back with Carl. We've also got Fred on the line on the Hal Ginsberg Morning Show.
With the guy's mother, find out that he's been mentally unstable for many, many years now. And for people like the union leader in New York for the police department, for a person like that to come out and say, you know, that De Blasio has blood on his hand and this is because of protesters, that's totally, totally uncalled for. Totally ignorant.
And there's no support. There's no evidence whatsoever to support that claim. Again, we're not talking, you know, if you wanted to blame the mayor, what you'd have to find is some community, maybe in New York City, that said, hey, the mayor's on our side. And then they start attacking, you know, or Viva de Blasio. That's totally not the case here. This is a guy who's not thinking things through, who isn't saying, well, gee, I've got an ally at Gracie Mansion. I can go ahead now and attack Cops with impunity. Just the opposite is what's going on here. And this across the city, again, we're fine. Yeah, you know, and that's what so ticks me off is on the right, is they're looking so hard to score political points with their, you know.
What they're trying to do is they're trying to shut down protest. They're trying to equate protest with a sick individual who did a sick thing. And that's what they're trying to do. They're really trying to shut down protests. And if the police departments around the country buy into that and escalate it, it's going to escalate.
That's
now, the police departments can say, you know what? We're not going to escalate. We're not going to come out and say that it's lawful protesters that did this right here. It was the acts of one sick individual. Maybe the police departments around the country will get back into the business of going against mentally ill people with guns, because for a minute they've been sitting on the sideline when they used to be the biggest champions on the left for gun control in this country.
Well, and you know what? That's what the takeaway should be. That's what the takeaway should be, is guns are too easily obtained. It's too easy to transport them across state lines. And also, we have forsaken our responsibility to the mentally ill. And also, to protect people by giving the needed treatment to those who are mentally ill.
Exactly. And I'm going to tell you this right here. In the broader black community, mental illness is something that's never taken into account. Normally, in a situation like this, I was shocked when the news actually reported on him being mentally ill and mentally unstable. I was shocked by that, because this is something that I noticed, that if you're black in America and you commit a crime, you're a criminal. You're not mentally ill. If you do something like that on the other side, then you're mentally ill.
Well, I think that what you see among poor people and struggling people is the absolute lack of resources necessary to get treatment. And I don't care if you're black, white, Latino, Asian. If you don't have money, you can't get mental health treatment. You just can't.
You can't get mental treatment at all. And the way a lot of people, and this is not just with black people, poor people, the way they get treated is self-medication, whether it be with drugs or alcohol. This is how people treat
so
their depression.
That is so
illness.
Accurate. You are so absolutely right. You have the kid who's an upper middle class kid. I don't care, white, again, African American, European American, Asian American. They're going to get their Adderall. They'll get their Adderall if they're a upper middle class kid. They'll get the medication, the self control medication. They'll go to the good college. They'll get a job where they can succeed or at least muddle through. The poor kid can't get, don't have a doctor to go to, doesn't have, you know, the necessary insurance in so many cases. I know that's changing a little bit. Carl, I gotta let you go, buddy. It's too loud. There's too much noise. I'll take him off. He can listen for a little bit. This is, again, the separation of the 1%, maybe the 10%. People with health, really the separation there is if you have decent health insurance or you don't, you can get but even there, even with good health insurance, good, what passes for good in this country, so many times you got to pay big co-pays, you got to pay deductibles, you got to pay this, that, and the other thing, and it becomes very, very expensive for everyone, but really upper middle class and above, to get treatment for mentally ill people. So they don't get it, and then they, every now and then, somebody goes off and kills a couple police. So many ways this demonstrates that this was a lone wolf. Again, the two cops who were killed were minority cops, Lou and Ramos. If this was really a statement against, I don't know, the white community, which is certainly what Fox wants you to think it is, by black people generally, then wouldn't you have found two cops who were white who were killed? It's not what Fox wants you to believe, but I think it's fascinating to go over it because the mayor, His Honor Giuliani, actually, and we'll get through this, a little more responsible. Tucker Carlson trying to fan the flames of racial divide, of divisiveness, of anger, of hatred. Let's go back to Giuliani. And he asks, have you ever seen the city so divided?
Divided. I don't think so. Maybe the Crown Heights riots. Maybe the Washington Heights riots.
You know what? The crime rate is about a seventh of the murders in New York now. Under Mayor de Blasio, I think they're going to be about 300 maybe this year, maybe. There were over 2,200 when Giuliani was mayor, when he, you know, during, at least early on. And crime rates have been coming down since Giuliani took office, if not before. Actually, really since Dinkins was really the peak, and then they started to come down towards the end of Dinkins' term in the late. I think he was mayor until 94. I'm not sure the exact years, but it peaked in the late 80s and then started to come down. Here's Giuliani.
It's in the 1990s when we had a similar theory that Mayor de Blasio has to kind of allow these protesters to do anything that they want. I admire Pat Lynch very, very much. I think he's a great union leader, and I consider him a good friend.
I want to stop it there because he's going to go into what a great union leader this is, the one who's attacking the mayor. And the attacks are so unfair on Mayor de Blasio here. All the mayor said was that he thought when he saw Eric Garner getting killed that this was excessive. He has not been out there bashing the cops daily. I can't find any statements like that. What he hasn't done is what Peter King did, what Giuliani did when he was mayor, is come out with full-throated support of any and all police actions are okay. That's what he hasn't done. He said, we got to look into this. And then Giuliani's criticizing the mayor because he's letting the protests go forward. I'm going to play a little more of this because Giuliani says something that's just flat out false. At least as far as I can tell, false.
It's too far to blame the mayor for the murder or to ask for the mayor's resignation. But I don't think it goes too far to say that the mayor did not properly
police. By the way, it's absurd. I just want to say that. Oh, yeah, I'm so open-minded here. I'm not going to say it's not the mayor's fault. We can't blame the mayor. Well, I mean, you could. Some people will, even though that's obviously false. It's a lie. But then to say, well, it's too far to call for his resignation. Resignation? Resignation under what possible justification? The mayor hadn't done anything wrong here.
It's the protest. He allowed the protesters to take over the streets. He allowed them to hurt police officers, to commit crime.
All right, let me stop that. The protesters to take over the streets. That is what protest is. That is what petitioning your government is. You walk in the streets. You carry signs. And for Giuliani to say, well, we didn't allow that to happen. I can't remember all the protests when he was mayor. I'm sure there were many in the middle of the streets. But certainly when Occupy Wall Street was in its heyday under Bloomberg, sure there were marches. Sure the streets were taken over. Absolutely. And the response is what should have excited outrage, that we're going to shut down the protest. We're not going to allow people to express their feelings. What the mayor has allowed, the peaceful marches throughout the streets, including closing down highways for a certain period of time, two comments on that. One, that is democracy in action. Okay, that's absolutely democracy in action. I actually have three comments. Two, second point is, it was peaceful. Giuliani's saying, oh, there were attacks on officers, it got violent. I'll tell you what, I couldn't find any examples of that. Honestly, I couldn't. Now, I looked. Now, I know, Jeff, if you've got them, go ahead, email me them, and I'll be happy to let listeners know. But as far as I can tell, the protests in Manhattan, as a result of the Eric Garner non-indictment, were peaceful. I don't know. I couldn't find any damage to any property. And I did find lots of damage to property, not in New York. Lots of injuries, not in New York. De Blasio's handled this thing extraordinarily well, trying to broker peace between warring factions. Yeah, the police are upset because he hasn't just taken their side 100%. But he's the mayor of all New York, not just the police. All right, phone number here, 844-4-HELGY, if you want to join me. 844-367-4254. I just want to get this when these guys were in office. Yeah, so Dinkins took office in 1990 and left in 94, and that was about the peak of the crime rate. And Giuliani sort of had already started to come down by the time he took office, and has continued through the present day. It's a much safer city. And, that's good. I think the broken window style, some people don't like that. I think it's been helpful. I think that most chiefs say it makes a big difference. Mayor de Blasio has really done the best he can to try to tamp down tensions. And it's very, very difficult, especially when you have media that's absolutely determined, bound and determined to excite tension, to excite anger. I want to get to another column, a columnist rather than a more commentary, let's put it that way, by Mike Lupica, who writes about sports but also comments in the New Yorker. I'll get to that in a little bit. But let me just talk about this briefly, where Giuliani is talking about the violence by the protesters. There's been a lot of violence. There's been a lot. And you know where it's been? In Oakland, California. In Berkeley, California. In London, England. This is from, did you know this? BBC London News. Police arrested 76 people who were taking part in a mass protest at a major West London shopping center. Dateline, December 10, 12 days ago. An estimated 600 people gathered at Westfield. I guess that's like, we have Westfield malls. They must have them too. In Shepherd's Bush for the so-called die-in demonstration. The protest was in solidarity with rallies in the U.S. prompted by the death of Eric Garner. Police said the arrests were made when a breakaway group assaulted security staff and damaged property. In Washington, D.C., we've had bridges closed by protesters as a result of Eric Garner. But somehow Giuliani wants to blame the mayor of New York, where the crime occurred, where the killing occurred, and some say it's all his fault because he's allowed peaceful protests. Outrageous. That's Republicans for you. That's the conservative movement for you.